Okay. Please. Please help me in this one. If I'm speeding up, slow me down. I'll try to take a big pause for every line of the revision. If I didn't, you should hold me back. So we're gonna do lots of derivation, but they're good ones. It tells us how to solve for u and v, how to make that equation simpler. And we're gonna solve it for scalar case. We're like, yeah, really? Yeah, really. It already demonstrated lots of good stuff. Now I'll show you why a spinner field is a spin up. With no assumption. With no, you know, silly argument about how many circles it takes to get back to itself. It's very legit. Before I start, I'll try to entertain you. Because not everybody gets my sense of humor. It might be weird. Okay, the question is, in today's relativity tutorial, they always afraid my jokes will be wasted. I'm going to ask you about the other course too. David is going to tell you to calculate a Riemann tensor. I just confirmed with him that he's going to do. And the question is, how many pages do you think you need to finish that tutorial? So the thing is, when I write that, I don't know ring is of 500. I'm just really trying to find to make some sense of a ring. And that shows up in Google. They're like, oh, that's convenient. All right. Maybe I'll enter you again after the break. Okay, today our goal is actually to build 1.5 field. So we'll build a scalar field completely, and we'll sort of build the Dirac field and leave the second half into this first version of the homework. It's a choice. You don't have to do both homework, but I'll be happy if you do both. Okay, so how do you build the field? Well, we have our creation annihilation operator. They are fundamental, so there's nothing we need to do about it, right? Let's see. How to build the field is starting with this. The field expansion of the mode of the creation annihilation operator. Then you have this new thing. It has lots of index on it. It depends on x and p. Making this works, it carries the, let's call it the field index, and it carries the spin index. Carry the spin index together with the particle, and somehow we convert it into a field index. Yeah? And our goal is solve for u. We know a is fundamental, so there's nothing to solve about it. And we just need to solve u, it spits out and gives us a field. Okay? We're going to accept that and then move on. Remember, we haven't done any calculation. We're just saying that it needs to convert the p to x, convert the x to l, and that's what it looks like. And this we know how to transform. It's ugly, which helps the field to be important. But it's gone. And then, this is at this point, it's really a dream. We dream these learning things transform very nicely, such that we can write down the Lorentz invariant Hamiltonian stuff. But unless we find the U today, it's only a dream. I'm going to write the log equation. And we'll digest it before we move on. So the claim, okay, of course, the claim is supported by the probably a footnote. Yep, check was enough.
Thank you. Okay. You were like, what the heck? Okay. No, luckily this is the longest formula we're gonna write down today. So we're gonna digest a little bit. This is just saying, okay, this is what we're after. I know, right? Sigh. It will only get simpler from now. It's saying there is a U that we'll look after. And after Lorentz transformation, X and P get a transform. It become like this. This is what we expect the field transformation. And then remember, this factor has a little group. Now I'm gonna draw some lines, some other lines. And it says this coming from operator A transform. So without actually trying to verify this equation is true, all the ingredients are there. How A transform is there, how field transform is there, so you can stitch them together to figure out how U transform. Yes? Let me just give you a few seconds to stare at this long equation. But every single part is reasonable. You need to do the calculation to find why exactly it's this, why that one is not inverse, this one is not a star, and all that. But at least it's reasonable, so we can move on. Okay. So the next three things, oh, since we get to do this twice, so I hope you kind of have a good feeling about this little group. Let's do it again. From K, it goes 2 to P, and then go to lambda P, and come back with a lambda P inverse thing to make it a little group. A little group will be important today. Okay. What I'm going to do next, sorry, let me just write a title, like the subtitle, like what we're doing here is a find equation for U. Well, technically I found it, but you can see solving that equation is not everybody's dream. So we're gonna use the little group and simplify this in three steps. And this three step will sound very familiar to you. Translation, boost, and the rotation. All the Lorentz, all the Poincaré transformation, that's all there. Okay? I'm gonna move on, yes? Okay, some nodding. It's okay, after this one step, it will look dramatically simpler than this thing. Okay, so steps There's a translation, boost, rotation. And you're like, why in this order? So let's take the step and see what happens. So the idea of why we're doing translation first is there is, for all that crap together, there is this really very, very nice inviting factor of a plane wave there. And we sort of think plane wave is related to translation. So let's take the step one. So the idea is to kind of reduce the plane wave factor and then maybe get rid of the x dependence. And luckily we can get that in one go. Can see how that makes our life easier. Okay, step one, translation, let's do it. We have a translation. That means my transformation is identity, some shift. Do you agree? Yeah.
Oh, why do you want to exactly get rid of x dependent? X.
Oh, I'm just saying that now u is dependent on x and p. So if I can somehow get rid of that, it's easier. We're just trying to make, this part and this part look easier.
Okay.
And that happens to be the result of a translation. Because x can be translated. You're like, huh? Can I do something about it? Then you try and realize it actually did do something. Okay. Oh, everybody agrees? Translation is the identity in the Lorentz and translate something. Okay, identity. Let me come back to my little group, which is identity. I'm going to copy over whatever I have there, except whenever there is a lambda, I put an identity there. So this is exactly that formula, except I use the fact that the translation has lambda equals identity. And now you can see, this is very nice. Yeah? It's like amazingly nice. It says you boost to P, and you stay there, didn't do anything, and you come back. It completely changed that side of story to like this. There's K, and it come to P, and just stays there, and then goes back to K. And in this situation, we say the little group is identity. Which kind of makes sense, because little group is the idea about Lorentz and about the rotation part of the Lorentz. So if you're doing translation, it has nothing to do with little group. Wow. So now you have W is identity, and the lambda is also identity. So that means the rep of the identity is going to be identity. That's almost all we know about a group without the other information. Still here, if W is identity, then the rep is identity. There is nothing we can worry, we need to worry. So those two annoying factor drops out, and there's nothing to sum with. S is some rep in the little group. Identity, there's no dimension there. Identity of lambda being identity, this also has nothing to sum over. So all the sum over S prime or S L, and they all drop out. What we get is U . So basically, this is the result gave us motivation to consider translation first. Yeah, lambda is identity. So the left-hand side, we have just a translation. momentum will stay the same. And on the right hand side, lambda p is p because lambda is identity. So we get this thing. Okay, almost successfully get rid of the x dependence. But let's do it now. It says the shifted the u, or is it connected to the u now, is a plane wave shows up. And what shows up on the plane wave is b. It's how much you translate. So we claim that I can also just do translation from zero. Hence, we're not going to write it. Okay, you can say that I take x plus b to be x, and x to be zero. Take some smart choice of coordinate, goes to zero, and this one goes to x. And the b goes to x. X goes to zero. Yeah, all this line is saying, if u at a position and another position that's translate, then they are related by the plane wave, and that plane wave is determined how much it's translate. So I can write it like that. I just fix the starting point at x equals zero. And this explains why in the field theory, it's always a Fourier transform. There's always a plane wave situation. But look, what we did is actually pretty phenomenal. What we did is take p squared equals m squared, which is the relativity energy momentum relationship, which is basically Lorentz symmetry. And Lorentz symmetry dictates that you have to have this plane wave shows up, and the other part has no x dependence. This tells us this field, whatever we're building, is going to be a solution of a Klein-Gordon equation. Because this thing doesn't depend on x. All the field x dependence is here. It's nice. It tells us if you start with the special relativity Lorentz symmetry stuff, you will end up with a field that is a solution of a Klein-Gordon equation. We never assume a field satisfies Klein-Gordon equation and solve it and stuff. It's the other way. The Klein-Gordon equation comes out of our conclusion. And all we need is translation symmetry. Okay, so this sped up step is not bad. But now we can plug in this step, right? It tells us how this is going to be equal according to that equation. And the result is that we'll be able to get rid of that plane wave. Yes?
Did we assume that our field must be Poincaré invariant?
That's right. That's what we assume.
Okay.
Is the field is Lorentz invariant? Poincaré invariant. Yeah, right. Because we're talking about translation. So the next step is to use this, just plug in that thing into this. You can see there's some plane wave is going to show up, and they're going to disappear. So I'm tempted not to do this step. But can you see that if I plug in this to there, it's going to spit out some plane wave and it'll cancel on the other side. And something else will cancel the end result. So basically you use this twice. Put this in here and you spit out some plane wave and you use that equation for this U too. So there are two U's, used twice. They both spit out some exponential, but then the combined effect is there's no longer plane wave. All the plane wave is taken care of by translation symmetry. So I'm going to write the result and skip one step. There is a step skipped, so you might not, you might be slightly unsettled with this. I call it a star. So this equation is the result of that equation. What happened? The x dependence disappeared. The plane wave disappeared. So now u is the only function of p. And we are making some progress. Yeah, does this look okay? Can I move on with this? So we take the translation step one and the exponential and the x dependence drops out. Okay, I need you to either nod to show that you agree with this or you ask some questions so we can spend more time with this. Yeah?
Could you explain again how you got the equation?
So I say that if I take this equation, I can try to write over here, this is gonna be u L S prime lambda P e to the I lambda X plus B dot P dot lambda P. And I can plug it in here. In here, it will give me U L S P e to the minus x dot p. So you use that equation twice, that circled equation twice, and you get this one. You get this one. The rest of the equation are copied on that board. The only left is the plane wave part, the exponential part. You can show the first term of this is equals to this because lambda x, lambda p, they both rotate. They should give the same result as x dot p. And the other term is exactly what is shown here. Any more questions about this step? Are you happy with this step? Okay. Yeah? Okay, move on. Okay, I see some some nodding this time. So now we have this thing to solve. This thing is still not nice. It has the general Lorentz transformation, which we know that it's always causing trouble. So the next step is I want to relate this to this. So we get rid of the x dependence, and I was very happy because it used 50% less chalk to write this one than that one. And now I want to do more improvement in the similar idea. I want to get rid of the p dependence. And what's the best way to get rid of the p dependence is taken to go to the rest free. So now I'm going to take it to the rest free. But you need to, the thing is, once I decided to choose this to be in a rest frame and the other one not be in the rest frame, then my Lorentz transformation, let's take a look at that, is really just the boost. Yeah? We want to bring it to the rest frame. It also tells you the starting point is the rest frame. Okay? So starting, or you can, based on that formula, it's the right-hand side is in the rest frame. Because you're doing a boost from the rest frame. If you don't start with the rest frame, the result you get is not going to be in the rest frame, and hence not very useful. Okay? So what happened here is there's k and there is lambda k, which equals, well, which equals p. So I can write this also with a k here, because k is my rest. It is my rest frame. Okay, where am I getting here? So now, again, little group W lambda p is, as we discussed, lambda is nothing but the boost. And the p, we are starting from the rest frame, hence the k. Okay, so now I decide to use my little group formula. It says it's lambda inverse of lambda p, which is lambda p, which is LP acting on k. It just says lambda p over here, but our lambda is this, our p is this. And the lambda is lambda LFP, because we have only boost. And the last one is L of P, but in our system, we are starting at the rest frame. So let this sit for a while. Because it's obvious to say translation shouldn't have anything to do with little group. But now what we're trying to say is the little group has three components. The boost to the starting point, but our starting point is k. Let me just copy the little group, the original formula, again. What I'm saying is that P is K. We are boosting from rest of frame. Otherwise, it's not going to help me. And the lambda is a simple boost. And with this two substitution, I haven't done anything else. I'm just changing the lambda with LP and the P with K. I haven't done anything yet. Right? Okay, now let me do something. What I realize is LP boosting K is by definition momentum P. So K with a boost become P. That's the definition. And hence, these two parts cancel. It's a, one of them is the inverse P. The other one is P. And the boost from rest frame, there's no boost. It's an identity. So interesting, very delightful. We choose boost to be the next thing to be considered. It tells us yet again, our little group is identity, which makes sense because little group describes rotation. Boost should not be related to rotation if you're boosting from the rest frame. That's what the little group tells us. And because it's identity, this yet again simplifies. There's nothing about the little group, so that factor drops out. And then the boost U and the U is related by whatever the factor is left. Because the LP is a legit Lorentz transformation and it deserves a representation. Yeah, first step, get rid of X dependence. Second step says, okay, depend on P is interesting, but it tells me, because this is my choice, this is the dream choice. So that it's my dream choice such everything would work. So that will stay. But it says it's okay. If you finish, if you figure out what's U at zero momentum, I can figure out what's U at the P momentum. Yes, since this is step two, let me pause again. Yes. Yes.
Why do you not get a rotation if you boost from your rest frame?
It says if you boost, it just says that the little group for that particular boost will be identity. You are not going to rotate from anywhere. But suppose you are like moving this way and you boost in that way. You can interpret that boost as some other boost plus some rotation. But it should be okay if you're boosted from the rest frame, because the rest frame doesn't have a rotation preference. If you start from any momentum, you have a rotation preference. You can rotate around your momentum operator. That rotation is specially chosen. If you change the direction, you will be choosing some other rotation.
Oh, okay.
But if you rest, there's nothing to be chosen to start with.
Oh.
Okay. Shall we take the next step? It's the last step we need to take to arrive at the final equation. Step three. Okay, let me write step two is boost. And the step three is rotation. Okay, so actually we're gonna choose it in the rest frame rotation. So you start with rest frame, because you see, I only care about momentum zero. We have no other concerns about this. This can be calculated. Can be calculated sometimes is good enough for us. Okay, so again, we're gonna choose P in the little group. We're gonna choose this again to be rest frame. And lambda, we're going to choose it to be a rotation. And lambda p will be rotating in the rest of frame, which gives us the rest of frame again. So you can see that if you're boosting from the rest of frame to the rest of frame, you didn't do anything. Similar, that one didn't do anything. The only important factor is a rotation. And it says, the little group is the rotation you choose if you're in a rest of frame, which kind of agrees with what we have before. Okay, so if we look at the equation star, we will finally get close to the final result. Which is telling us how, well, this is, see, you have USL on this side, you have UL prime SL. This is the equation for U. If we solve this thing, then we win. We find our field. And then, normally people will write this as the linear equation, drop the identity, and take what we know very well as the generator. You can see the two equations are identical, except the D is the representation, and the J is the generator. And you see, U of zero is related with two things. Is how a transform, in the other word, is what kind of particle we have. It's spin, how much particle? This is what it depends on the left side. And this is the rep we pick. I mean, we should expect this. Because you connect particle to the field. Then how U is going to be determined depends on what kind of particle we are, and it depends on what kind of field we are. And for the rest of today, we're going to solve this. And now I'm going to make a pause, see if there's going to be questions. Yes.
Can you explain again how we go from this to this?
This to this?
Yeah,
this to this. Yeah, it says it's. With some IG omega IG. Says if you have a wrap, and then you can expand it into its generator. Whatever works for your rep should also work to your generator. Yep.
So the two D's like on the top line,
yep,
are in general different representations.
Well, they should be. Your particle, you pick a rep that is. This is a rep of SU2. And this is a rep of SO31. And it's maybe potentially related because SU2 is SO13's little group. But we don't know that. At this point, yes, at this point, we wouldn't say that they are the same reps. We have nothing support us to say that. But you can see, you are predicting the end of the lecture, is that if we choose a rep, it turns out it seems that what comes out as the particle, due to some group theory theorem that happens to be, it almost feel you can predict, they are the same in some way. If you say spinner, is a spin half rep. And then we're going to see why spinner gave you spin half rep. Okay, so we'll take a early break today because I kind of say something in the next 3 minutes.
Coach, there be like a J index for the J on the right hand side?
No, because this J index coming from when you do the classification of the J. So that other J comes from one way where the S and the new lambda will transform in something, and then there is a little J there. I have a Lorentz group. Great, give me a rep. That's not an experience clicked which kind of part it will come up. But they are basically exactly
repeating.
So basically, what happens if you choose a different rep, the J on the left hand side will change accordingly.
I mean, even if you write, so you really shouldn't use the same letter D for them because they're not the same.
Okay, that's a good point. Next year, I'll come up with some like curly fancy.
I don't really get.
This is
two x.
That's right.
But apparently we live in different spaces.
I don't know if it's defining that, but like
DJ is traditional for Lens group, but D Lang is his position, Fanadash was addition for Lens on field label, but it's confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like as you two, or
imagine you do it.
But if I restrict to the rotation group, then they're the same.
Yes, if you restrict.
But
you don't know that they're the same.
So first we cancel
the
dependence.
We restrict the rotation because we only have a rotation.
So we're studying the
first
one.
Then
you
get
the why are the representations not the same when I go to the algebra?
Why true?
Well, yes, but
freedom to choose the
it's a representation of the field labels, so that's a
finite
type
equation.
Yes,
because
yeah.
It's
not
sure.
The.
I mean,
yeah.
Here,
yeah, so like if we were like a four factor, then we'd be like a four
factor.
Yeah. And then the other one is
my roommate was
it's like
we're transforming like a daggers.
So if I need to have one, this is matrix one.
The other one for spin one,
so I mean,
you
have four components of the four
vector and
vector. Right.
Vector and
match. So right. Yeah.
But
most important message is like when you
have
a
position.
Okay.
I mean, is that it's not the unit that it is?
You know, at least what's confusing to you. I don't know.
Okay,
let's get started. We spend half a lecture get to this point. When we can start solving for U, and this is the final equation for the U, it says because it connects A, the Croatian-Nicene operator, they transform with the little group, which is SU2, so you must have some SU2 rep, but also we also expect to related to some generic Lorentz group rep because it connects to field. And oh, there are several comments. Very good. I have heard very good questions in the break, and I'm going to make some comments. The first comment is there is a J here. And J labels what kind of particles we have. J equals 0 is a spin 0 and a spin half and a spin 1. It's there because once you gave me a creation operator, I can just look what kind of particle you create. That one is fixed. But the other one doesn't have a J because this is a generic Lorentz rep. At this point, I don't know anything about it. The second comment is that now I add the arrows on the J and the saying we only care about the rotations. Otherwise, as Tom correctly pointed out, I kind of drop off the expansion parameters. Those omegas, they are not the same for SO one 3 and SU 2. They have one have 6, the other one has 3. So I have to pick the rotations. So now I can drop them and connect with the generators. At this point, you should forget about the first half of the lecture. and don't let all these little details bug you. But focus on this, okay? So now we're gonna the general recipe. Okay. I'll give you a general recipe. Is that you pick a wrap for Lorentz that you're like, oh, my field transformed in this way in Lorentz in Lorentz group. So this is for field. And then you ask, what is the spin of the particle? And then you ask, can I make causality work? So yesterday I said I'm going to elaborate on the causality, and we're going to elaborate it now. And then you claim, yes, I successfully built a field, and you should celebrate it with Champin. And so the first part is I'm going to build you a scalar field. So let's see what have you done in Dan's course. Is that you assume it's a scalar, so it transforms, and you also assume it will give you a boson, right? You never bother to figure out why it should be a boson. Those are the assumptions. You assume that there is an expansion, so there is a creation annihilation operator. Then you assume that they must be commute. These are the assumptions. And what we have done so far is to figure out. Also, question. Remember, like I told you, I don't like this part. So there is the mode expansion. And then these are just promoted. Is there a way to support why it happened to be promoted to be one-off and a one-off without any other constants? I mean, you can fix one of them to be promoted to be one coefficient to be promoted by A. But the other one, there should be some business going on. But nevertheless, we overlook that and study the theory. Well, it's a good theory. Okay, so the idea is, so this part is nice. So we'll pick the wrap to be the trivial wrap. The trivial wrap means its identity. Means the generator all gets to pick to zero because it's one plus something times generator. If the wrap is trivial, that a one gets destroyed. So the only thing we have left is generator, and they should be zero. Okay, if you look at this thing, if you pick this to be zero, it seems the most rational answer to this equation, which is zero, which U and S to be solved to be something non-zero, is that J, trying to write it nicer, is also zero. So that's a easy thing to solve. But the idea is if you pick them to be zero, there's nothing to sum over. It's just zero and a zero. It tells you that if I pick if the trivial representation L is zero. And on the other side, S is also zero. So there's nothing to sum over. That means I seems lost the L and the S two. All I left is this, U zero is a constant. Because the boost says at a different P is connected to zero by some rep, but the rep is in identity. So for scalar case, whatever this constant U of zero is constant, it's a constant is a constant. It doesn't depend on P, doesn't depend on X, or depend on X with the same e to the minus IXP, but this doesn't depend on, but this is what you expected. And I'm going to write UXP equals U0. And VXP equals V0, because for the creation of operator, for the annihilation operator, you have a minus. For creation operator, you probably have a plus. Okay, this is all very good. If it's written this way, it's basically ask why we can choose both U0 and V0 to be one. That's the first question. The second question is, why is it a commutator? So the legit way to do, well, the legit way is that I build my creation annihilation operator with some linear combination. So I should answer. So that the phi minus and the phi plus is builded with coefficient one. But I pick some linear combination and I try to ask the question, what should this linear combination be? Okay, at this point, we need to have some commutator, anti-commutator written. And I hope this does ring a bell. This is nothing but your bosonic propagator. If I just take the annihilation and creation field, it should give you that. Yeah, do you remember doing that? Creation and annihilation field should give you a propagator. Okay, so let's see what this propagator gives me. Oh, okay. So let's look at this one first. This one is very nice. So I claim this one, I'll write phi y here so it's easier for me to do calculation. Right? I want to do the commutator of those two, commutator, anti-commutator of those two. And we know phi minus and the phi minus, they commute or anti-commute because there's only A. And the phi plus and the phi plus only has A dagger. So the only thing left is we have K lambda from phi minus x to phi plus y. And similarly, we're gonna have k lambda. Again, by this time from phi plus x to phi minus y. Yeah, these are not surprising manipulation. Commutator of this two had best to have four terms, but if they are the same, then they drop out, and the cross terms are given here. Okay, so now I make the following claim, is that I'm going to use this definition to write it as k lambda d x minus y. But the next line is not a minus plus, it's plus minus. So I need to swap them. But I don't know if it's commutator and a commutator. So I have to do it for commutator, it will be a minus sign. And for anti-commutator, it will be a plus sign. And then I successfully swap them, it become dy minus x. And what we know is that d is even at a space-like. Yeah? Look at this. If it's a space-like, you can pick some, you can pick the time to be the same, and you only have the spatial momentum, and then you can do the p goes to minus p change, and you will realize it's even. Okay, so it's even, I can take them out. What I left is this thing. Oh, by the way, what do we expect the commutator is at a space-like separation, commutator or anti-commutator? What do we expect it to be? Zero. All right, now we have a situation. One choice says it's k lambda minus k lambda. The other one says k lambda plus k lambda. It seems that we're down to one choice. It's forced to pick this minus sign. Remember where we get the minus sign? We want to swap this term and pick up that minus sign. So we just showed that it has to be a commutator, hence has to be boson. So you pick a trivial rep, and the other side is trivial, so we got the two conclusions. So trivial rep, this is what we assume, assumption. But out of the calculation, you find it must be spin zero, which is a trivial rep on the other side, but it also has to be boson if we can have a causality. So this is a very cool thing. Okay, so the other thing I tend to give you the result, but not compute it, because the last calculation today is very profound. So what I'm going to do is say, if you calculate a phi x and a phi y dagger, which if you make these kind of assumptions, your dagger is not equal to phi. then you can do the similar calculation. I mean, it's still, there's mix and a match, there were four terms, but there were only two terms that are non-zero. So if you fast forward to what will you get, this is a very similar calculation, so I think can be left as an exercise. So the idea is you get is this. So you can see, again, we'd better pick out the minus sign. The plus sign is not going to do you any good. But on the other hand, you show that the k and the lambda had better be modular the same. And Weinberg says, suppose there is a face. And then he says you can define your annihilation operator to have the face to absorb the face. And then you will end up, the punchline is you will end up with the scalar field that you learned in the last course. Exactly. But this is very profound. You choose a rep, and then you figure out its spin zero and a boson at the same time. Some of the calculation might be trivial, says this is zero, that is zero. But nevertheless, you get one stone for two birds. But now I'll show you the other one, which is a little complicated. But I think we'll probably put you in ease about what if this only works for trivial rep. Zero is a very special thing. So now we're going to choose something very not that special. Okay, so until the end of the class, I want to convince you that if I choose a spinner rep, I'm going to go to get a spin half out of it. Okay. The goal is to find its spin half. And the homework will find you that it's a fermion. Not only it's a fermion that satisfies the Dirac equation. Still, optional homework. The other, but you can only one is optional. Okay, spinner rep. Let me rewrite this equation of field again. Okay. So tutorial, we find out what's rotations generator in spinner rep, right? Let me ask, what's the answer in the tutorial you'll find? In the tutorial, you pick the particular rotation and you find out the generator. What's the generator?
Volumetric.
Oh, no, the J. Like, what is J12?
Some combination of polymatrices.
Some combination of polymatrix, okay. The answer is exactly half polymatrix and its block diagonal. Okay, you say that the J3 is a sigma 3, and then you can do the other two, you realize that the other two pop out. It makes sense. Okay? So the first trick, I have no idea why Weinberg figured out all this trick, but it's a crazy trick. It says, I'm going to separate the L index in this into two index that has M and the plus minus. So plus minus means upper half and the lower half. And the sigma itself has M index. It's reasonable. If I want to find anything that is an L, if I know if it's upper half or lower half, and if I know the index of M, then I'll be able to find it. It's equivalent because M goes from, there are two possible answers for M. It's a poly, so it's two. And there's two possible answers for plus minus. So together it gave you four. Is that okay? I can give you an example. For example, L equals one. It used to call it L, but now I'm going to call it pick the upper half and pick M to be one half. At this point, it's completely just new notation, and you have no idea why that Weinberg would do that. But the idea is this thing's block diagonal, and Weinberg likes to exploit on that. Okay, let's try to exploit on this. What would happen to a J, L prime L, R in this case? Well, I hope the first thing I write down doesn't surprise you. It is separated into M prime plus minus and M plus minus. Yeah? I didn't do anything. I just called L some other thing. But here is the important trick, is that they both has to be pick plus or both pick minus because it's block a diagonal.
Can you explain again, what is this notation for L? M plus minus, why is
it? So basically it says for each L, it's rep, no, you maybe this is silly. That's what we meant.
Okay.
So basically it says in order to, so all these are like L. This is like L equals 1, 2, 3, 4. Mm-hmm. And what Weinberg claim is that you can tell me which block are you from, which is plus or minus, and then you only need to tell me the row and the column in this little matrix.
I see. And that's M.
That's M.
Okay.
Good. Okay. But now let's get back to this J, that the some nice poly matrix, diagonal poly matrix. It says his next argument is that if I'm referring to specifically this matrix, there's no point of giving a plus and minus in both index because plus minus doesn't exist. This is a zero. Minus plus doesn't exist. It's a zero. So I only need to give one. The other one is considered the same. For two sets of plus minus, if you just follow this notation, but one actually vanished because it's diagonal. It's block diagonal. And then the next step says, okay, fair enough. I pick a plus and look at what's M prime M. But that's, if I pick a plus, it's just poly. So this thing whole thing then equals to poly. Yep.
I'm a bit confused if L is a, if L represents some column or row number, then how can it be one half of the?
Oh, so sorry. So this is M. So this is a thing. I'm saying that if it's a poly, because I know it's a spin half, instead of using 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm going to use 1/2 minus half, 1/2 minus half.
Oh, okay.
So the plus will get me to upper corner or right, the lower corner, and then the next number half or minus half will point me somewhere in that polymatrix.
Okay.
So he divides this whole thing is trying to make use the fact that J is 1/2 sigma. So now I'm going to rewrite this equation. M prime plus minus S prime 0 J S prime S J R. But on the other side, we already know. It's just a poly. On the other side, and then everything is very nice. Okay, so far we use a trick, get rid of the J and write the half poly there. Yeah? But then he says, I can interpret this as two equations. One is labeled by plus, one is labeled by minus. Well, that's interpretation. But this interpretation is going to be cute. I want to draw some. So look at what the cute thing is. Now you were able to do that. So you can consider this equation a matrix equation. When they are repeated index, they are multiplied together. It's like saying this equation is the same equation as some U matrix labeled by plus minus. And take the M prime S component. Yeah? So this U matrix is just U M prime S prime. And this J is S prime S. They multiply together, give you M prime S, some component. And on the right hand side, you do the same trick. Yeah, do you agree that we can? Basically, that's what he wanted. Turn L into M and plus minus. It says plus minus, it's just a label for equation. And if you look at the M and S, they start to form some matrix equation. And before you have this thing, which you know it's very simple, it's half poly. There's two polys, but half of them. And now you utilize that and you'll arrive at the equation like this. And now, Schur has something to say. So this is a rep of SU2. By definition, you actually did that in tutorial one. Yeah? And this is a rep for SU2 because it come all the way that this is how the states transform. And then Schur says that if you can find some matrix to turn a rep of SU2 to another rep of SU2 in precisely this way. And this is the same matrix, U plus and U plus and U minus and U minus. They did this job, swept with a rep and somehow gave you another rep. The Schur lemma tells you that your choice of U plus minus, all the choices, not limited, is it's zero. Very helpful, thank you. But the other one says it's a square matrix. I believe it also says it's non-singular. So there is a theorem in group theory tells you that you can solve this thing. Except the zero is not helpful for us. U is zero, okay? You have a zero field. But a square matrix is helping us tremendously. Because let's say, what is exactly is a U plus of M prime S? Wait, what? There. You look at the original. The point is, this matrix is labeled by M and S. And now Schur's lemma says it's a square matrix. Okay. U is a square matrix. And its index is M prime S. Well, we know M. M is the index of the Pauli matrix. So M we know, 1/2 minus 1/2. That's what the index, this the index can be. And Schur's lemma says S had better match that. Otherwise, you are not a square matrix. Otherwise, you can't solve that. So here is the result. Because all the possible value for S to pick is 1/2 and minus 1/2. Then we have to accept the fact that the spinner wrap describe a spin half object. And you can do a little bit better, because now you know, but a spin half, which means this is also Pauli. And you ask, what commutes with Pauli, with all three Pauli? Identity. There's nothing else commute with all the Pauli. So that has a nail on the coffin determines what's our U. And then in the homework, if you choose to do it, what you will do is something like this. Make it a field and see what the causality has to say. And what the causality has to say is what you expected. It's a Fermi. Thank you.